Hey, everybody, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. This is my microphone that I'm moving, and I just used it in an interview to talk with Ross Baldwin, which you're about to see. We're going to talk about the livestock industry, find out about his golf game, his wiffle ball game, and which was a bigger impact on livestock, the Holcomb fire or COVID-19? The obvious answer, of course, is COVID-19, but we're going to hear why. Going to look at the livestock here for the next couple of quarters and into 2024. Some very interesting insight here from Ross, who is with agmarket.net, same firm that gives us Matt Bennett on the Market to Market TV show. So just a little point of reference there and understanding where he's coming from. Where we're going now is to the full interview with Ross. Do you like playing golf, Ross?
Yeah, I do. I'm not very good at it, but I do like playing golf.
So Monday, when I tried to get a hold of you to record this, you were out on a golf outing. I didn't think I didn't think that was something you did in the commodities business.
Yeah, truth be told, it was the first time I've been out golfing all year. The first time I swung a club. They had the Iowa Cattlemen's Beef Masters tournament down in Denison, Iowa. And a group of us went down, and it was a nice day. The weather was gorgeous, and we had a good time.
So who are you golfing with then?
So I golfed with my brother Kyle, and then two other friends of ours, clients that I work with. Both are row crop farmers. One's a Pioneer seed dealer. And so we all went down there and golfed 18 holes.
What's everybody asking you right now?
Obviously, the big question in the cattle market is how higher price is going to go and how long are we going to stay at these high prices?
Yeah, it's all about the prices with everybody, isn't it?
It is. It is.
We'll get back to what they really want to know and what I want to know. So you're in Western Iowa, right? Is that what you call it, or do you call yourself Northwestern Iowa?
Yeah, we're kind of right in between in Western Iowa, Northwest Iowa. I'm in a town of Anthon, Iowa, small town, 500 people. We're about 35 minutes southeast of Sioux City.
And is that your home area?
Yep. So I was born and raised here, grew up just southeast of Anthon. My family's got a cattle feed lot we've spent our whole life feeding cattle. My grandpa Wes started feeding cattle back in the 1950s, and my dad has a cattle feed lot. We feed around 4,500 head at my dad's feed lot. His brother and son operate a feed lot right next to his, and then my uncle's other son has a feed lot right there. So between the three feed lots, there's 7,500 to 10,000 head of cattle right there.
Did you envision yourself being full-time cattle feeder as a kid?
Not really. You know, growing up, we spent, you know, our summers and growing up, you know, just working around cattle our whole life. And my brothers and I, actually, our whole summers was about playing baseball. We just liked when we weren't cleaning cattle waters or working cattle, we'd be in the backyard playing wiffle ball. And that's so I didn't ever envision I'd be, you know, probably feeding cattle at the rate we are, but I guess, you know, as they say, life comes full circle, and when something's in your blood, it's you know where you end up, I guess.
So when the professional wiffle ball league didn't develop the way you wanted it to, you had to have another option, is what I'm hearing.
Yep, had to find an alternative.
Were you more of a fielder, better fielder, better hitter, better pitcher?
First base. I mean, when we were playing wiffle ball, me and my two brothers, I mean, we were all pitchers, just throw it as hard as we could at the other guy. And if the curveball didn't bend, then the other one was going to be mad.
You had to wear it and move on.
Yep.
What did your brothers did you have those discussions? I mean, some people it's always we're all in, and others are like, we're all out.
Yeah, so both of my brothers, I'm the youngest of three, my oldest brother, Kyle, and then our middle one, Colt, they both work full time at the feedlot with my mom and dad. And so they're both out there every day. And then when I'm not working here in the office in Anthon, then I spend a lot of time out there helping them.
You also could do math, because you figured the third one, there might not be enough room for me to eat at that trough.
Yeah, exactly.
So at what point did you realize that, I mean, was there college in your future after high school?
Yep. So I went to college down at Northwest Missouri State in Maryville, Missouri. I've got a degree in animal science. And then after graduating college, I wanted to get into grain merchandising, actually. And there was a brand new grain elevator that was built just south of Anthon that I got the location manager role of that. And that was back in May of 2012. So my first year in the grain industry was obviously the year of the drought that we talk about frequently. And I spent a little over 6 years managing that truckhouse elevator, handling corn and soybeans. And then after that, I went over and I worked for Flint Hills Resources at an ethanol plant in Arthur, Iowa, and did kind of merchandising and a lot of commodity risk management for them. And
Flint Hills is one of those that they think of it as an energy company, but it has history in exploration, right? Do I have that right?
So Flint Hills Resources, I mean, they do, heavy in the energy market. They've since sold off the ethanol plants that they had. Poet is the owner of them plants now.
Okay. So then after Flint Hills, what'd you do?
Yep. So after Flint Hills, I was really ingrained in the commodity space, heavily focused. I mean, you know, in the grain markets, I've done a lot of risk management in corn spreads, soybean spreads. And at the time, as I was working through both jobs, started feeding a lot more cattle at my family's feedlot and just kind of kept progressively getting more and more involved with my brothers and my dad. And then I knew that I always wanted to kind of get into the commodity space, more of the commodity risk management. And following, you know, close to 10 years in the commercial grain world, I was more ready to jump then than ever. And we ended up, ended up with AgMarket.net, which the parent company of AgMarket.net is John Stewart & Associates. And one of the head partners of John Stewart & Associates, I had got to know through the commercial grain space. He did risk management at both the elevator, the grain elevator that I was at, and then we worked with him when we were at Flint Hills. And so we ended up, with Ag Market and get to work, every day with the guy that I started out working in the grain industry with.
You also got to know some guy named Matt Bennett.
Correct. I got to, Matt has been vital in helping get us started, our office. I've got two other partners in our office. All three of us were in the commercial grain space. So, you know, the commodity brokerage world was new to all three of us. And we couldn't ask for a better company to be with. Matt and the other main partners, they've been phenomenal to work with.
When you were playing wiffle ball, who was your father using to help market his animals or figure out how to purchase grain? Was he doing that on your own? Was it your mom doing it?
My dad, did it on his own. He did not ever really work with a commodity risk manager. His dad, they just all, did it on their own. You know, back then, I would say the cattle industry, obviously, it's went through a lot of change over the years. But, you know, they did, you know, more packer contracts, I would say, back then. We do very, very little, if any, packer contracts today at the feedlot. But, you know, that's just kind of, how the cattle markets evolved.
You're talking your personal feedlot, you're saying, doesn't do a lot of packer feedlot contracts.
That is correct.
Okay. So your dad kind of did it on his own. How do you tell someone like your dad that, hey, maybe you could have some professional help?
You know, it's never an easy answer or a thing to bring up, but I mean, my dad, he understands. I mean, the volatility of the cattle market that we've seen. I mean, when you go back to, I mean, gosh, even the early 2000s, this market, the volatility has just only continued to pick up. And obviously with 2014 to 15 and then the volatility coming off them all-time record high prices and then 16 through 20. I mean, it was, a massive sell-off in 15 and 16 and and then felt like we were turning the corner in 19. And then we had Holcomb had their packing plant fire, and that threw a massive wrench into the cattle markets. And 6 months later, it felt like, okay, we're finally turning the corner again. Then we get COVID. So, I mean, it's just kind of, the volatility over, let's just go back to 2014. There's been no shortage of volatility in the cattle markets. And, my dad, he fully understands it now, along with several other producers, that, hey, we're in a good spot right now, but we can't let this thing play out the same way that we've seen it over the last, call it decade.
So you're not in a square in the cattle industry. You're more like an octagon where you just keep going and there's just a slow corner that you turn. Because do you ever feel like you'll go back to something that's, lack of a better term, normal?
I don't know that we will. It's hard. What is the word normal in the cattle market anymore? That's a hard one to say. I think this volatility, it's obviously here to stay. I mean, for the foreseeable future, as we navigate through this bullish market that we've got. But I think as eventually when numbers do increase, and we do expand the herd, maybe a few years down the road, maybe that would be a more normal market than what we're currently in at these all-time high prices. But yeah, for right now, a market like that feels a long ways away.
I guess define normal. What makes something normal in livestock?
The word normal to me in livestock, I hate to even throw out a number like this, but the word normal, when we come off 2014, when we got up to the previous all-time high prices, 2014, 2015, and then we kind of settled in after that big sell-off, 16 through, even just a couple years ago, $1.25 to $1.30 for your fat cattle, that was probably, the word normal. You'd hope to get a rally up to $1.30 and get a good spot to hedge some cattle and, make a small profit, that's probably the word or more normal to me. But hopefully we're a ways away from that being a normal market, given what we're dealing with today.
Do you find a certain level of conditions that are normal, like a certain number of packers or a certain number of large feeding operations, medium feeds, small feeds? Is there any type of balance that influences some of this?
It's a great question. Normal to me in the cattle industry, you bring up the packers, normal to me, I know this is opening a huge bag in the cattle industry, but normal to me is how we operate today with the packing industry. I mean, you have the four major packers. We have smaller regional packers, but that is normal to me because that's what we have dealt with. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that is the way the industry is. And that's how we have, we've had to navigate through the markets over the last decade. It is, with the packers that are here. And I don't see that changing. I don't see, there is expansion occurring. There is more packing plants coming online. But I don't see that being, a huge driver in the, in the foreseeable future right now. Obviously, these are not normal times with the rapid, slaughter levels that we've seen across the cow industry. I mean, we've been going on over 2 years now of aggressive cow kill. That's not normal. I mean, the inventory numbers that we've seen rapidly declining, the last two semi-annual cattle on feed reports in January, that's not normal, which is what has led us to these all-time high prices that we're seeing. And again, that's not going to change either. I mean, this next January, which we'll get another semi-annual cattle on feed report coming up shortly, but look out to next January. I mean, all cattle and calves on feed, I mean, they're going to be rapidly down again. We continue to slaughter cows at a very aggressive level in this country. And so definitely those aren't normal levels.
Okay, so do you buy or subscribe to the theory of the cure for high prices is high prices in the sense of demand is going to get cut out that is going to maybe somehow keep some of those animals in the lot.
I absolutely buy into the saying there is no cure for high prices like high prices. There, you know, conversely, there's no cure for low prices like low prices. I know we're talking about livestock here, but let's talk about, you know, the grain market just real quick. I mean, we've seen the corn market. It's just, you know, we've sold off over 90 cents here in the last 5 days. But prior to that, we rallied $1.40 on December corn from the May low to the high here recently. And that was on the weather concerns, the drought that we've had, you know, dryness across the country. The problem, though, that the corn market had going for it in the wake of all of that was the recent high prices we've had the last couple of years. I mean, it's no secret to anyone in the grain markets. Corn demand, for a lack of better word, is terrible right now. I mean, our exports are terrible, and there's a lot of other things. Obviously, you know, cattle numbers down, but, you know, high prices have cured that. I mean, that is why we're in the state that we are. As it relates to the cattle market, eventually there's no question high prices will cure what we have going. Demand is when you look at, hey, what's something that could take down the cattle market right now? I mean, in my opinion, the fundamentals, the tightness that we're in, that we're seeing, I don't see that changing. And I know there's several others out in the cattle market. I mean, we've got to this point because of, it's unfortunate, but years of destruction across the industry. I mean, coming out of 15 to 16, how much money was lost, you know, after the first time we had all-time high prices. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but the Holcomb packing plant fire, I mean, that was devastating. And then COVID, and then the last, coming out of COVID, we were thrown the drought across the country, and your feed costs just screamed. I mean, coming out of, you know, August of 2020 when corn finally bottomed. And so we've unfortunately got to this point because of the amount of destruction. And once you start the cycle in the cattle market, you just don't change the fundamentals on a dime. You know, we're not even, in my opinion, we're not even talking about, you know, big heifer retention this year. I think you're looking out into next year before we're really starting to see maybe the retention, you know, of heifers. So from the sheer fundamentals, numbers only continue to get tighter. I mean, for both the market ready fat cattle and even on the, you know, the cow side of things.
Who wins in that scenario then? Who's the biggest beneficiary of less retention?
Your question is between the fat cattle feeder and the rancher.
And for the sake of the packer too.
You know, so I'll hit real quick with the packer being the last one you brought up. I mean, packer margins have, you know, got back in the positive here. Obviously, box beef has, you know, screamed higher. It's since really been coming back down aggressively over the last 10 days. But I mean, the packers have done a phenomenal job managing this tight inventory and their throughput. And they're extremely good at what they do. And so they have done a very good job of keeping their margins positive. They have had a blip here recently where they were negative. But moving forward, I don't think it gets easier for the packer. If you start talking Q3 and Q4 of this year, later this year, Q1 of next year, I think the packers really got their work cut out for them because these numbers are rapidly going to start getting a lot tighter than what we thought. I've been in the camp telling people, I really think you get past the first 10 days, 2 weeks of in July, we're going to see these market ready fat cattle are going to be a lot tighter than what people realize. To go back to your question, I mean, the fat cattle feeder, we've obviously had a really good run here. I mean, the last couple of years have been good. This last turn right now, I mean, anything that we've been selling for the last 6 months it's been extremely good, which is, you know, needed across the cattle markets. The rancher, he's having a really good go right now too. So who wins? I mean, ultimately, I do think that comes down to, I mean, we can all win, I guess, because we are all in a position right now where we are profitable. But managing risk is going to be key. I do think, I mean, who's the winner at the end? I mean, there will come a time where risk management is going to be key for the fat cattle feeder, the rancher, the packer. He's going to be just fine.
Well, and it seems like the packer always has been fine.
Correct. That is correct.
And there's very little sympathy for the packer, even though some of them are publicly traded companies that probably some farmers own some stock in, either because of whatever scenario. And in America, we sure love it when our companies that we have stock in perform well.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, I don't mean to yell, but I mean, that's what I hear. And I know you hear.
Yep.
All right. So let's go to the question of who's best set up for the scenario, the picture that you're painting. The small-time producer who's less than 100 head, the medium-sized one, or those ridiculously large ones?
So I would say up here in the north, the northern feeding region, we have had a major advantage to the southern feed yards over the last couple of years. The north, we've outsold, you know, the southern feed yards. I mean, we've been tighter on numbers. One result of that is over the last couple of years, a lot of farmer feeders up here in the north that got caught up 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, feeding $8 corn, said, I'm not doing this again. I mean, we weren't getting enough money for our fat cattle back then. And so it was not lucrative to be feeding high dollar corn like that. Let's just say $7.50 to $8 corn. So we have been tighter on numbers, no question. Cash has led the way up here in the north. You know, there are some big feed yards up here in the north, but as a whole, we are a lot smaller in size relative to the southern yards. I do think we've been better equipped up here because our feed costs have been a lot more manageable versus what the South's had to deal with what the price of corn's been. You know, the South is catching up with the North now on cash. Cash is very undefined at this point this week, but you know, the South's traded some 178 to 180 so far this week between Kansas and Texas. It's been very quiet. Northern trade, very undefined. People have been passing bids. But I do think we are going to see the South continue to increase on cash prices. And you can look at the previous, you know, several previous cattle on feed reports. I mean, on feed numbers and placements down, especially Kansas, Texas, they have been well below 100. And so, you know, Texas, look at the drought issues that they've had down there and the high cost, you know, high feed cost. And Kansas has obviously dealt with high corn cost over the last couple of years. So we are going to start to see those numbers, you know, really tighten up, I think, in the South versus what we've been used to.
Well, let's talk about the South. Last year did a lot of stories about Oklahoma and Texas drought and yards shipping some animals to other places. It has rained in the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma and in some cattle feeding areas. What does the Southern outlook look to you?
Yeah, so Texas, as you mentioned, I mean, they dealt with just a severe drought, you know, and all across the country, you know, issues. But let's just talk about Texas real quick, because I think Texas, it is a major driver of what we're seeing in the market. So yes, they have gotten good rains recently. I mean, their drought has been easing, all but dealing with excessive heat right now. But when you look at the drought that Texas has dealt with, when you look at the weekly cow slaughter, okay, down there, recently they peaked out, and it's part of a region down there, but Texas is the main one in that region. I believe they call it region 4, but they were in that region killing 16,000 cows a week. And that was as recently as I think a month ago. I haven't looked to see exactly what that number is right now, but the peak of that number was just under 25,000 cows a week that they were killing. And Texas was 16,000, or that region was 16,000 cows a week. To put that into perspective, back in 2014, the peak of what they killed in that region was 6,000 cows per week. It is staggering, you know, the amount of females that we've killed across the industry. And currently today, we are still killing a lot of cows and heifers across the country, which tells you we're not at that retention phase yet to where we got to worry about, you know, which that's even 3 years out, you know, from the time that you start retaining heifers. But I do think that's just a really interesting number to throw out there as Texas has dealt with that drought. You know, hopefully they can all catch a break down there, and, you know, with, you know, moisture obviously is a lot better than what they've dealt with. And, I mean, they could definitely use a, you know, cheaper cost of gain down in, you know, Kansas and Texas versus what they've dealt with the last couple of years.
Why does someone in Anthem need to care about what goes on in Texas and Oklahoma?
I mean, so Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, I mean, you know, as it relates to feeding fat cattle, Texas is the number one state, you know, with number of fat cattle on feed. You know, as it relates just overall numbers, Texas is the biggest. You know, with fat cattle, I mean, you got Nebraska and Kansas, you know, being number two and three, but the southern yards with the big corporate feedlots, they are where the numbers are at. And so it is key to watch. And if we can see them start to outtrade the north, the Texas and Kansas feed yards, which I think is going to happen, it shows you how much more current the industry is versus what we've even been. I mean, we're already extremely current, but
tell me, define current, because I know what it means, but how do you define current there?
I define current as, you know, what weights are that we're shipping cattle out, what cash continues to do, obviously the choice select grading. But current to me is, in the simplest terms, what the weights are that we're shipping out and what the appetite is from the packing industry. And I can tell you at our feedlot, just right here in Anthem, over the last year and a half, it is nothing for us to have four different bids from four different major packers. And to me, that defines that, that sums up the word current in the cattle industry. When you have packer competition, you're current. That's what we have today.
Sounds balanced too.
It does sound balanced. It's actually fun.
Okay, I asked you a couple of political questions. I was going to steer away from them right now, but I'm going to get political for just 1 minute. We had hearings about 6 months ago, 12 months ago, about these four big packers, and maybe they're too big and there needs to be a little more oversight. When the government gets involved, does that upset the market, or does the market shrug it off what the government's doing? At least when you hear about and you see hearings.
Government involvement always scares me. I will say that, or overreach, you know, but as it relates to the packing industry, I know there's always been a call for, we need the government to get involved. You know, there's even been calls to break up the big four. I'm not in that camp. That is an extremely tough industry to where these major four packing companies, it's a tough void to fill. So, I mean, these plants, I've had the luxury of touring Tyson's Dakota City plant here a couple times over the last couple of years. And it's a mind blowing tour to go on to see from start to finish how they're killing 5,000 head of cattle every day. So, I know there's, you know, calls for the government to get involved and break that up. I struggle with that one, to be honest with you, Paul. When you go through those plants and watch how they the amount of workers that they have and how efficient that process is to slaughter 5,000 head of cattle every day, it's a humbling experience to see just how well of a machine that is. And it really gave me, you know, a whole different perspective when you thought about the Holcomb packing plant fire and COVID and how quick it is to derail, you know, the production side of things, of what they're trying to do every day.
Well, you've said Holcomb a couple of times, and I wrote it down I wanted to go back to that. Which was a bigger influence on the livestock, specifically cattle market, the Holcomb fire or COVID?
COVID, no question. So Holcomb happened. You know, that's a Finney County plant, 6,000 head a day slaughter facility down there. When that happened, I mean, you start backing up, obviously 6,000 head of cattle a day. It was devastating short term to the industry. The crazy part was, is once we did get down the road, the other packing plants started picking up the slack enough to where we were slaughtering just as many cattle without Holcomb as when it was online, you know, down the road, once they started getting cattle jockeyed around and shifts running more efficient. You know, that was about a 6-month problem of backing cattle up. And then we get to, it started feeling like when we started out 2020, January of 2020, hey, okay, maybe we're finally working through. Holcomb was back online. Maybe we're finally working through this. And then COVID hits in March. And that was, I hope I nor anyone else in the cattle industry, and obviously the world with what we had to deal with, but let's just say for the sake of the cattle industry, I hope we never have to see anything like that again. Because once that happened, you know, I don't remember off the top of my head what the lowest slaughter number was, but it feels like 70 to 75,000 head a day. You know, we were backing up 50,000 head of cattle a day. You know, there was, I think, one week there where it was over 250,000 head of cattle that we backed up. I mean, by the time it was all said and done, you were talking a million head of cattle, over a million head of cattle that we backed up. And I mean, it was, that was a tough market, you know, because even as cattle feeders, we were, you know, you had zero leverage, absolutely no leverage. And the prices had plummeted, were plummeting. And we were essentially all just trying to beg to get kill space, you know, to get cattle slaughtered. And it all worked out. Unfortunately, you know, it was financially horrible for a lot of producers, and it's led. I mean, coming out of Holcomb and you know, the grain markets rallied during that same time frame, it was like we just got one blow after another. But it's ultimately what's led to, you know, that kind of destruction has led to the market that we're in as numbers. I mean, you know, they peaked out that, you know, back then, and we just continue to see them drop rapidly.
Give me the difference now, 2023, and some of the factors that you mentioned moving in the next 2 years for a livestock producer versus what we had going into 2016. How are we going to be different and not have that collapse of 16? Are we set up any different? That, because, I mean, you've checked off a couple of boxes that give me pause to kind of poke a little hole in what you're saying and the rosy outlook here.
Mm-hmm. So I will say right now, and I'm bullish now, I am bullish for the remainder of 23. It's hard for me not to think that 24 isn't more bullish than what we currently are. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get fat cattle prices, and I hope we do. I don't know. That don't mean that we have to have fat cattle cash prices go, you know, well over $2 live. I think we will eventually trade $2 live on fat cattle. You know, one thing to where 24 can be wildly profitable without cash, you know, screaming to $2+ live prices is if our cost of gain can come down, which is we are seeing that come down with what's going on in the grain markets. You know, and I mean, corn rallied the $1.40 the time it did that, and in the same time, feeder cattle, August feeder cattle, as bullish as they are, they sold off, corrected after going to you know, they actually had a double top on the weekly chart of the previous high back in 2015. I don't think that holds long term, but feeder cattle, white corn rallied, you know, at $1.40, they sold off over $18 now, and the bullish story for feeder cattle in that same time did not change. I have been extremely bullish feeder cattle, and I honestly think feeder cattle is one of the most bullish markets out there, as those numbers are extremely tight and they continue to get tighter. But as corn has sold back off here recently, which cost of gain is coming down, feeder cattle now have put over $13 back on in the last 5 days, I think it's been. But looking out into 24, you know, the USDA and their May WASDE reports, their June WASDE reports, they have, you know, beef slides. The grain markets get all of, you know, the hype is around the grain markets for the WASDE, but the USDA does have slides in beef. And the May WASDE report is always when they give their outlook for the upcoming year for 24 that we got to see on this last May WASDE. And they made a massive reduction for beef production out into 24. And I believe it was 2.3 billion pounds that they are forecasting beef production to be below this year. And this year is already down. They've had to make a lot of revisions, actually, from their initial one for 23 due to drought, the amount of cows that we're killing. So we've had more production than what they originally were forecasting. But that last year in the May WASDE in 23, the decrease that they made, I believe it was initially like 1.8, 1.9 billion pounds lower versus 22. That was the largest decrease to beef production over 1 year in 44 years. They've since had to revise that because of cow kill. We're not going to have that near that low. I believe they've actually raised it like maybe one billion pounds, 1.2, something like that. I mean, we're still 800 million pounds below the previous year. But this May WASDE that we just had, they forecast beef production, the 2.3 billion pound decrease. That was the largest decrease in 45 years that they're forecasting for next year. So as it relates to market ready cattle, the availability, it's just simply not going to be out there for 24. You can't turn this thing on a dime. Feeder cattle, you know, we just had our cattle on feed report last Friday. You know, the placements, there was people that thought, oh, that placements number came in as bearish. It was 105% placements versus the guesses. They weren't thinking it was going to be that much. What drove that is the dry conditions that we've seen across the country, coupled with where feeder cattle prices are. The ranchers are so wildly profitable at these kind of prices. They're selling these feeders very quick. And I can tell you, even from personally at our feedlot, we've been buying feeder cattle back as fast as we possibly could, because we know the writing's on the wall of what's coming post July. The availability is just not going to be out there. So that number, yeah, it was a bigger placement than what people thought, but there was a lot more that went into it than just seeing a 105% placement number.
You took advantage where you could, or you can't.
Correct. That 105% placement number, that was actually the first placements number that we've seen above 100 since last September.
Oh, it's been that long?
Yep.
Wow.
I know you asked, so how does this end? What's different versus 16 and the way that ended? I have been in the camp, and I continue to tell people this will end the exact same way that 2015 and 2016 did. We will go from, you know, all-time high profitability levels, all-time high cash prices. Risk management will be as key as ever. I still think we've got a good go of it. I do think, back to our comment earlier about high prices will eventually, they will eventually slow demand. Personally, I'm not too concerned about demand right now. I think when you look at some of the U.S. economic, you know, data, unemployment remains extremely low. Just spending across the country, I mean, people continue to spend money. I mean, we see it here. I've traveled across, you know, some bigger cities in the Midwest, and you just see people are out and about. They want, I think that was the one of the biggest things COVID did was, I mean, people want to be out and about, and they still remember that. So I don't have too many concerns about demand, you know, let's say over the next 12 months, but it eventually, these high prices, they're going to weigh on demand, which ultimately will weigh on cattle prices being at all-time record highs. And it makes managing your risk as crucial as ever. The stakes have never been higher is what I keep telling people, especially with what we're paying for feeder cattle.
You can't call Spencer a big town. That's not a big town when you're saying you've been to all these big towns, things like that. Ross, last question. Are you a better driver, chipper, or putter?
We did use a couple of my drives at the tournament on Monday. I'm not much of a golfer. The one individual that golfed with us, he did shoot, knock in two eagles, actually, and he almost got a third one. So I didn't have to do a whole lot of chipping, I'm going to be honest with you.
Fair enough. You got to make your dough where you can, be a good putter. Ross Baldwin, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
All right, my thanks to Ross Baldwin. If you have any feedback for me, markettomarket@iowapbs.org is the email address to use. I look forward to hearing from you and see you next Tuesday for another installment of this podcast.